ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast. Many of us are waking up to God's not a formula to be worked. He's a God who loves us, who has a purpose in the world to redeem it back to himself, who will work good in our lives through the most horrible things that we face.
When we first started this whole podcast thing, you and I were trying to come up with a name. I just remember somehow the whole God Journey thing settled.
And we've had people tell us that was a stupid name.
Those just few words say an awful lot of true things. This is my journey. This is just my deal, my little story. It's not about me. I am just a supporting actor in a greater drama that isn't about me.
And it blows your mind. Ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast.
Check out that new intro. That's awesome.
It sounds like it's coming across space and time.
Yeah, from... there's old phonograph stuff, and then, ooh, I loved it. It was great.
And then to know that your mind is blown. I don't think
that'll
be
a surprise.
I don't think that'll be a surprise to our listeners.
No,
No,
I'd be here with blown minds.
So,
you had a tough week, didn't you?
That's good.
Words are not enough, are they?
It's only been the last 4 days. I tell you, it just reminded me of why... relationships are just a mess.
Yeah, they're hard.
And they are.
Life happens.
It's amazing when the heat gets on how many people resort to throwing accusations and...
Without really knowing what's going on, huh?
Well, they know a piece of it and they think their piece is all of it. And then that makes it much more complicated because the people who know really what's going on behind the scenes... And it's not always stuff you can talk about without exposing people in ways that it's not right to expose and... I tell you, I have not been involved in a relationship crisis crunch like that for, a long time. So, yeah, it's been a bit exhausting. It's all on the internet too. It's all on a list that I run that took a leap off the deep end last weekend. But I tell you, God's sewed up some things in a neat way today. Some real healing and things have happened at the end of it. So it's ended well, but I'm exhausted. So this podcast is yours to carry.
You don't get help it.
What could help it?
That picture that Dave Aldrich sent us.
No, I don't think
Yeah, you put it up on the website?
No.
That was awesome.
I can't do it.
At least we'll bring hilarity.
I'll put the video up.
It will bring hilarity. Oh, we got a new video.
We got the video.
Ooh, God Journey videocast.
When the guys from Family Room Media were here a while back, did their documentary, they put together out of some of the extra...
A little behind-the-scenes
The outtakes. Kind of a little behind-the-scenes, three-minute look at the God Journey and how we put this thing together. So... We'll put it up on the website this week. People want to go there and give a look on the front page.
It's got a good look.
It does look good. It's a Windows Media Player kind of event, and gives you a pretty good picture of what we look like when we're doing this.
I'd always take
this
seriously.
You would?
I would, almost. Not really, but almost.
Okay.
All right. We're here for some lighthearted hilarity.
That's
why I think you ought to put the other picture up. I think there ought to be a revolt out there. Everyone ought to demand. Send emails to Wayne to put the little picture that Dave Aldrich sent up on it. And he'll send the other one. He'll put the other one up.
I am so beyond being manipulated today, so let them come.
Those emails and cards coming.
My delete button is working well.
I think it's because you've been doing your devotions in Leviticus.
That's the other thing that's been tough. You know, once every year or so, I take your journey through the word? I take my journey through Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, and I'm telling you what.
How's that working for you?
You know what? I tell you, I'm dying here.
There's some wisdom in there, bud.
Yeah, there is some wisdom in here. There's also a lot of just, oh my gosh, can you imagine that?
I'm glad that the dietary laws are a little different now.
Me too.
They never mention anything about fudge brownies.
But it's not just that. It's the total vicious portrait of God that if this were the only scriptures we had would leave you with a pretty distorted view of who God is. I mean, you're stoning children for talking back to their parents. And I'm not even sure what all that's about. When Jesus has the opportunity to do it for someone who'd committed adultery, he made pretty clear that's not where God's landed on these things. But when you read it just in its raw stages as these people are unfolding it and the amount of dying and minute little details that had to be just so, and if not, you know, people keeled over and died. And that's a tough bit. Tell you what, it doesn't get me every morning just walking out here with a dance in my step and a song in my heart.
Not putting the whistle thing going?
The advantage is I've read the end of the story.
But and, you know, isn't life like that? Unless you're around for the longer part of the story to watch how it really fully unfolds, you can get some pretty warped ideas.
You can. It's a good warning to us. I mean, people sometimes get so far into a story and then just think that's it, and they stop there.
And they react to it.
I am so glad God didn't park his tent in Leviticus. I'm glad he moved on.
Traveling through.
Traveling through is something so much better. Absolutely. But it really is. I mean, it's kind of, you know, like you said, there's nuggets in here of really wonderful stuff.
There are. There's some amazing things in there.
And there's little seeds of things that I've been really touched by. I've been reading a book. I don't like the title of it, but it's called God's Honest Truth. I don't like the arrogance of the title.
But explain that a little bit.
Well, it's his view of truth and how the institutional Christianity has twisted it a bit, which is why he sent it to me, I think. And
he alone is being honest now.
I agree with it. Well, no, it's not that. It's not that way. It's not that bad. It's it comes off like he's a little new still in the journey, and okay. So I still got some angst with some things. But I really like the thing Sarah and I have been reading in the morning is about the last few weeks about God doesn't boast. And he told this great story. He told the story of he was a guest speaker at some big conference, and everybody's just there in awe of this man. And you know, people have just got stars in their eyes when they see him. And he had related a story earlier about he grew up separated from his dad, he and another brother. And during the summer, each of the boys would go separately to spend 2 weeks with their dad, but not together. The older brother came back one summer after his 2 weeks with dad before the younger one got to go. And was just talking about how much dad loved them and all the neat stuff they did and how powerful it was and how dad loves him more than he loves the other kid. And
that's great.
He said absolutely the biggest part of his summer was going to be with his dad. And hearing his brother talk about being with his dad just made him feel like mine will never rise to that. It just kind of – and he called – that's what boasting is, that boasting of I've got something better than you've got. And so he's in this conference. This is a great story. And he's all the leaders take him out for lunch one day, and they're getting ready to pray. And they all say, they all kind of turn, why don't you pray for us? And he said, okay. So he bows his head in the restaurant and he prays, God is great. God is good. Let us thank him for our food. Amen. And I love what he did. He said, the reason I did it is because everybody's sitting around the table in awe of me, thinking I have this special relationship with God that no one else can have or does have. And he said, I just wanted to blast that balloon to smithereens.
Rub it up, Dub. Thanks for the grub. Yeah, God.
I love Leviticus. I was thinking about that reading through, and there's this, you know, the Levites could only work in the temple till they were 45. And then they couldn't do it anymore. They could help others do it, but they couldn't do it. And I thought, man, that's such a neat thing. I don't know why it necessarily was true in the temple, but when I look at eldership in the New Testament, I don't look at guys who are up front doing all this stuff, impressing people. I look at elders as those who've done it, and now they're helping others do it. It's not for them. It's not their angst to be in the limelight and to push themselves forward. It's their joy to help others connect and help others do what God's given them to do and help others be a part of it. And I've been freshly encouraged in that and just in just my own life. I'm the things I'm enjoying most right now are the projects that are helping other people get to the place that they feel like God's called them to be at. Not necessarily I've had my day. I've had my fun doing things that God's put on my heart to do. And I'm sure there's more that'll be true. But sure. I think the joy of it right now is helping others. And I love that whole deal about not being so boastful about even our relationship with the Lord that other people who listen just feel so intimidated, like I'm never going to get there. And I think that's easy to do. It's easy to get excited about what we're going through. And if we've done that on this podcast at all, even thought about that, man, because you and I talk about it because we want to encourage people to live it. Certainly, if we've if I've gone overboard to make people feel intimidated, that's not our point at all.
Oh, not at all.
Our point is to help people really discover it. But I love it. So,
why do you think we're so comparative? Because I think that's at the root on the receiving end to sometimes when you hear someone's great story, as opposed to just, I mean, I'm so refreshed when someone tells a wonderful story and someone else responds with a joy, a shared joy of, wow, that's great. As opposed to, oh, I suck. You know? I mean,
there you go with the language again.
No, it's normal for my generation, all right? Relax. It doesn't mean to you what it means to us.
I hear you. I don't.
Why do you think we're so like that? Because, I mean, it's rare that I see someone that can easily enter into the joy of somebody else as if they're just celebrating that with them. I think that's a point of generosity and maturity that I'd love to see more wide scale, but I don't.
Well, it would take somebody real secure, wouldn't it? It would take someone secure enough to hear God doing a great thing in someone's life and to be so at peace with what he's doing in yours that you just celebrate that.
Yeah.
But if you're kind of cruising through every day feeling like you're missing it, and I think the institution does this very well, and I'm not so sure we're free of it when we're outside of it either, but it really, I think the institution creates this environment where everybody pretends to be doing better than they are, and what people project isn't at all the reality. And when you feel like you're at the bottom rung of a ladder, I do think there's a protective thing that kicks in, and it's so you just intimidate it all the time. I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it for me, when I don't know that I do this so much now because I don't even think in these terms a lot, but I used to compare an awful lot, and I used to be jealous a lot. If I thought, you know, I hated seeing people from my generation who did the whole free sex, free drugs thing in the 60s and then got saved and wrote the bestseller books because they did stuff I never did. And then they got saved. And so
it's not fair. They got away with it.
I got a bestseller out of it to boot. I'm thinking, you know what? If I would have done some of the – if I'd have murdered somebody and told the story, it might have been a good story. I think it's insecurity, and you just are so unsettled in who God's made you to be that when you hear somebody else talk about it, it's difficult to share that joy. Until you do say, oh, my gosh, that's great, and that's what God wants to do similar things in me too, and how do I embrace that? Instead of it being encouraging, sometimes it can be discouraging, which is sad.
Yeah, because it does seem that a fair amount of religion puts a whole performance treadmill out there, and then to find out how you stack up in the whole mix, it is kind of a competitive comparison thing. And Paul addresses it pretty clearly in his letter to the Corinthians. He says, you know, when you compare yourselves with yourselves, they that do so are unwise.
Yeah, and it's hysterical the way Dexter, who that compare themselves with themselves, by themselves, for themselves, it's a hysterical passage.
Or dumb.
And you learn nothing. Bottom line is you learn nothing. What God's unfolding story in my life doesn't compare to God's unfolding story in yours or anyone else's.
Well, I've never really heard a whole lot of sermons on the celebrated uniqueness of each one of us. I mean,
well, go ahead, preach one. I'm listening.
I'm not here to preach one.
Okay, go for it, bro.
No, amen. We're done.
Come on, Mr.
Now
Dobson.
For the real fellowship.
Talk to us, Dobson. Talk to us.
Someone in the email, they thought you sounded like Dobson.
And they thought you sounded like Joyce Meyer.
They're at you. Put that picture up, Dave Aldridge.
Dave.
In the whole bit, it does. I think that's one of a point of confusion for a lot of folks is they end up in trying to figure out where they're at. They do end up by default in that whole comparison thing. And I just realized God is doing such a unique work in each one of us. That, you know, most sermons, most stuff is preaching, you know, if God was really great in your life, these things would be going on. And you're just going, well, that's not what season I'm in. And it's really hard if you're on the downside of that with whatever is being championed, and that's not what God is doing in your life. You know, you wrote one of your books, I think in Tales of the Vineyard or something like that, whole dynamic of the seasons of life and how things are different. And how God is not doing the same thing in all of us at the same time.
Yeah, definitely not.
And I think when you have a sense of the uniqueness of the fact that God's doing something in me, and it may not relate to any of the folks around me, when you can embrace that with a measure of just kind of settled security, I do think life becomes a little easier because I don't spend a lot of wasted time comparing myself with other folks.
You know, one of my favorite passages from the letters to the churches that Jesus writes in the first bit of Revelation through John is he talks to the one church, is to him that overcomes, I'll give him a white rock that has a name on it that no one else knows except the person and Jesus. And I think it really speaks to that uniqueness you're talking about. If we lived in that reality, if I realized today what God's doing in me is unique, how it unfolds is unique, what he's making me to be is unique, man, we could really enjoy as this journey unfolds. But I do think the world teaches us that there are these false standards of success. And Time Magazine just got it today, and I just perused the article very quickly on the cover. If you haven't seen it, it's got a Rolls Royce on the cover with a cross for the hood ornament. And it says, "Does God want you to be rich?" And part of the discussion is this, you know, wealth standard, or in the writing industry, it's book sales numbers. It's whatever sense of standard of success that we inherit from this world. All those things are false. But if we don't know they're false, so that then I get threatened or I get jealous or I get whatever when someone else, then that whole comparative thing kicks in, which that's why Paul says it's so absurd. God's got a unique thing going in you. And if you say, well, I've got to have this kind of money, have this kind of marriage, have this kind of whatever, I'm already putting false standards on myself. That's, I think, robs us from the journey, absolutely robs us.
Yeah, well, you talk about what would, you know, just a couple of things that might reinvigorate the fascination in our relationship with God.
Well, that's,
I think,
fancy talk.
I know.
Fancy talk.
I know, I'm just trying to entice people. The
I'm intimidated.
I know.
I'll never get there. I know it.
Quiet. And the whole dynamic, I think if people took some time, as opposed to checking the lay of the land and trying to figure out what's going on or what other people are doing, if they would just sort of settle into the discovery of, Lord, what are you doing in me? Uniquely me. I mean, yeah, with that sense of being able to kind of dive headlong into that, into the deep end of that pool of just going like, God, you know, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. I am unique. There's nobody else out there like me, thank God. Hmm. And to be able to sort of find a little bit of sense of how God looks down upon you in that uniqueness and his fascination and what he's crafted, and to get some sense, just some inkling, even if it's kind of seeing through that glass dimly, to be able to have some sense, you know what, God's doing something in me. I can't see it all. I don't understand it all. But I know he's at work in me. When that starts to come alive, I got to tell you, it's like the tide changes. As opposed to swimming upstream, I feel like I'm getting carried along a little bit, because I do recognize I don't have to compete with the guy down the street.
Or down the river.
Yeah. And I don't have to get there first.
That's right.
You know, it's like I can kind of settle into the fact that, you know what, he said he's going to be the author and the finisher of my faith. Well, that's pretty nice.
Hmm.
That means I don't got to whip it up, and I don't have to keep it alive. I don't have to make it happen, but I can trust that he's going to author something, and what he authors, he's committed to finish. That's just good news.
That's great news. And if we can take a deep, deep breath and just relax into that reality and ask him to help us do it, I think our journeys would even out so well, and we would realize that my unique personality, who God's made me to be, and the gifts he's given me to some extent, also the experiences I've been through, where I've been wounded and where I've been hurt and what God is healing in me, all those things make up a unique representation, or maybe Paul's word, vessel, even if it's a cracked vessel, that sets the vessel in mind that God gets to make himself known in the world through, known to other brothers and sisters, known to people in the world. And I really love the sense of waking up, and where if all the other agitation is there, and I'm comparing this, and I've got these frustrated dreams, and I'm angry over this not happening, and, you know, if we could just stop and say, oh God, I know you've made me this way. I know you've put me in this time and space in my life, and I know now that glory can unfold as you ordain it, not as I have to struggle to make it happen. I think that whole relaxed thing is so key to people living this journey. The agitation doesn't work. It doesn't provide the fruit we think it would.
Oh, no. I mean, so much of my life, I could have been characterized as a frustrated and kind of driven person. And, you know, perhaps if you were looking from a distance, you might not pick that up. Perhaps if you had traveled down this journey a bit, maybe you'd pick that up right away. You know, I don't know. But the reality is, I recognize I lived much of my life with a sense of frustration. And probably born out of an impatience of just going like, God, why don't you do all this stuff right now? And it's like, isn't this your will? I mean, like, you know, you look at that cover, it's like, doesn't God want you to be rich? It's like, well, part of me like, sure. I'd love for that. That'd be great. And it's like, you know, the truth is
really,
I don't know that it would solve anything.
It wouldn't solve anything.
You know, it might make a couple of the struggles a little easier, but with it would come its own set of stuff. And you're just going like, gosh, I don't want to waste so much of my life wishing I was in a different situation than where I am at. And somehow I've recognized that, and I don't know how this has been produced. I really don't quite understand that, but I think somewhere in the last 4 or 5 years, through the trials and challenges of being in a much different situation than I thought I'd be in, I've recognized I'm far less frustrated. You know, it's like so many of the people I know wish God had just a magic wand, and he just wave it. And it's like my experience is he doesn't, or if he does, he doesn't use it much.
I think we could be pretty safe in saying he doesn't have it.
But I find a lot of folks struggle with the fact that it's like they kind of wish he did. And I'm going like, I think I used to understand that. Now I don't. I'm so much more, I think, because of what he's doing in me. Somehow I'm more in touch with the fact that that isn't how he functions. And I find myself surprisingly okay with that. I recognize, you know what? Anything that really matters in my life has taken a lot longer than I thought it would. It's had a you laugh. It's had a lot more challenges.
I like joking with you, but God has a lousy sense of timing because he doesn't live in time and space in the same way we do.
I mean, not at all.
He comes and visits, but
doesn't seem to be rushed. It doesn't seem to be in a hurry.
He talks about things that are like tomorrow, that are, ask Abraham and Sarah, about 25 years off, and every picking month she has her period, and she knows she's not pregnant, and she's got this stupid promise from God, even past her menopausal time, and she still doesn't have a kid.
I thought you said pastor menopause. I thought that was funny.
No,
just go on. Go on.
No, don't even go there. I told you, it's a bad night. It's a late night.
Go on.
I think you're right. I think to put those... to project onto God our time frame, or what we, God has never done things in the time frame that I thought, even being patiently generous, which is not one of my virtues, but even when you're doing that, you know what? He does all things well, and he does them deeply, and he does them in a way that really works. He doesn't just do the little, like you said, wave the magic wand or whatever. And if that's the kind of God you're looking for, I think people do end up very frustrated because he doesn't do it the way we think. And then, two, we either blame him as he doesn't care, he's not being fair, you know, the whole Job approach, or we blame us. I'm not trying hard enough. I'm not doing enough. He doesn't know who I am. That was my approach. I've got to do more to get his attention. And so you'd redouble your efforts to be more pleasing to God, and that doesn't work either.
You know, I've had a couple of really kind of exciting things surface in the last week, and it's weird. It's like part of me has spent some time just sort of going like, really? I mean, thinking about if that really happened. And you know, those were good moments. I was like in a little daydream, I was like, wow, that'd be really cool. And then I also realized, well, gosh, you know, I've had a lot of exciting possibilities most of my life that if I took score, most of them really haven't happened, you know? And I'm not bummed about it. You're just going like, gosh, a lot of things haven't really turned out like I thought they would or like I hoped they would. And yet I'm content with where they're at. And it's like, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, well, yeah, a lot of those things would be nice, but they don't always, you know, they don't always happen just like that. And I don't know, I think I found myself this week appreciative of a renewed sense of hope and not frightened of that. Not going like, oh, yeah, you know, when's the other, you know, shoe going to fall? It's more like, Lord, great. And if that's what you want to do, so long as I don't put a whole lot of hamburger helper of my expectations along with it, that'd be awesome. I could really see something of your kingdom happening through that, and I'd love to be a part of it. But I don't seem to be as attached. I can't tell you why or how those changes have happened. I've just sort of kind of noticed this week going like, gosh, you've worked something in me, Jesus.
That's neat.
And I'm really happy. And it's like, you know, you just said, you know, God does all things well. I just wonder what our lives would be like if we believed that and looked at our lives with that thought in mind that, you know what? He doesn't do things poorly. He's not forgetful. You know, he hasn't gone like, oh, that's right. I forgot about Brad's dreams. You know, if we realized he actually does, he does things well and he does them in such a way that they're meant to last. And if I kind of inserted my life as that work that he's about, I might approach my day a little different.
And that would be as true of, like you're talking about, maybe dreams or visions or desires we have in certain creative pursuits or vocational kinds of things or whatever. It's also true, I think, of the pains we've been through. And, I mean, I heard a horrible story today of someone enduring spiritual abuse and that even had some sexual element to it. And man, my heart just breaks. And it's affected them for years afterwards, and as it probably should. And as God's working them out of that, I think we need to be as aware. We don't control the unfolding of promise in our lives, and we don't even control the process of healing. What we can do, I think, every day is wake up and say, God, here I am. I'm yours today. What are we sorting out today? What are you sorting out? And going through that day and watching it happen and finding out on this uniqueness of my journey, as we were talking about earlier, what's God making clear today? What's he healing in me today? What is he? And I think that just makes us wholer people. And less with the angst we talked about earlier. I was with one of my brothers a few months ago, and we're having a fresh time of reconnecting in our lives. And he's an older brother to me. He grew up behind this type A. I even looked at him and I said, you know, I don't know what it was like to be the older brother of a younger brother who was trying to have the impact Martin Luther had on the Christian world by the time he's 22. And that's pretty much what he did. He just laughed at me going, you have no idea. And I'm sure I don't. I think that caused lots of pain, not only to me. It obviously impacts other people the same way. And my early days of quote-unquote ministry were all about driving the persona and trying to find this niche of influence. Not even a niche. Man, I wanted the whole broad sweeping thing. I love the peace that's there now. I really don't care if I don't write again. If I don't, I don't care. I really love him every day. I really enjoy him being in my life. I enjoy the personal connections that most of them God brings every day. Some of them get a little exhausting, as we talked about earlier. But I really do love the life that God's produced in us. And I want to see him get the rest of that angsty crud out of there when it pops up its ugly head, too. Because I don't feel like I'm done yet, but I do feel like I'm far enough along that the angst of trying to find Wayne's place in the world or Wayne's place in God or Wayne's place in anything, just I don't have it. I don't care. I love where I've landed. I love the doors God opens, and I don't mind walking through each day what's there, even if it's kind of nuts.
Do you ever get frustrated?
You know, it's been a while. I mean, I got frustrated this week over the whole relationship thing I mentioned to you, but no, in terms of a personal frustration about my life, no, not really.
There's a contentment.
You know, if I get Mexican food 4 days in a row when I'm traveling, that'll do it. Not my favorite thing, but sometimes I'll say, God, let's have chicken today.
Well, we'll pray for you and what happens with that.
No, I don't have the enduring. But you know what? You never know what you'd be like if God took everything away tomorrow. You don't know. I don't know how I'd respond to all that. I don't know if some fresh, painful, traumatic thing would happen in my life, how I'd respond to it. And I don't feel like I'm immune from that possibility. So I'm not saying, hey, everything's just wonderful and God's got this little bubble over
me. No, I mean, there seems something very shallow about the presupposition that, you know, if I was doing everything right, and I really love God, and I was serious about it, that somehow my life would be immune to the challenging, painful things that seem to hit the righteous and unrighteous alike.
Now we're back to Leviticus, though, and Deuteronomy.
Yeah.
Man, if you do A, B, and C, I'm going to make you rich, wealthy, happy, secure.
I never read that in the Leviticus. What version
Deuteronomy,
you got?
Oh, my gosh, your crops will come in. Oh, my goodness, yes, it says all that. I think where we've inherited that is from the kind of language that says, if you get it right, if you're disciplined enough, committed enough, then God's blessing is released to you. And if you don't, if you're not faithful to the covenant, if you, you know, dabble in temptations, if you have a bad thought, if you said some bad words, harsh words to somebody, like use the word suck on a podcast, then I'm kidding. Then you're out of it for a while. I mean, you're just gone. And I do think that's what Deuteronomy says. Do good, do good, do bad.
Do you think that's what it means? I'm not trying to do some gymnastics with it, but I'll be honest. I don't really read that as some just wholesale promise that says, okay, you know, blessing for obedience, cursing for disobedience, period.
Well, the caveat, the great caveat to all this Leviticus Deuteronomy stuff is in Romans when Paul says it was never going to work. You would never be faithful enough on any given day to earn anything from God. It was never meant to work. It was only meant to draw you to Him because you're not good enough.
See, but I'll be honest, and you know,
well,
maybe
honest,
I don't
please.
Maybe I don't quite, you know, fully understand it. But when I look at some of that, I think there is some truth to the fact that, you know what, there's wisdom laid out for us in those first five books of the Bible that you embrace a fair amount of that. And guess what? Some wonderful things can be released in your life. I don't think it's a performance track. I don't think it's just a contract. I don't think it's the way we kind of interpret it. But I think there's some truth there that, you know, this is a pathway for life. This is a release of blessing. This is my heart and intention for you. And I do think there are consequences and penalties for disobedience. But I don't think it's like, well, I'm going to reward the righteous. And
well, there's definitely consequences, but you read through this. Guy picking up sticks on the Sabbath, and they stoned him.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't quite get that.
I mean, do you live by any of this? I mean, really. I mean, the biggies, yeah, I don't murder, commit adultery.
Hey, we're producing the Ten Commandments. I embrace those.
bear false witness against my neighbor. But do you wear two kinds of thread in the same garment?
I don't know. Look at my T-shirt.
Yeah, 50% polyester, 50% cotton. There you go. Got a little problem here. I mean, there's things here that just are down to such minutia, and to think a guy picks up sticks gets stoned.
Let me ask you a question. What do you think that's in there for?
Now, that's
any guess?
That's a great question, but a whole other podcast probably.
I know, but just, you know, you don't have to wax eloquent forever, but just what do you think? What are you getting out of it? You're spending your time in there. What's God saying?
Oh, I said there's little glimpses of who God is and all that, but there's also these big moments where you're going, wow, is that really what he meant? You pick up sticks on the Sabbath, they stone you. And that's why the Pharisees were so angry at Jesus. If he was healing, the guys picked up his mat and walking with him on the Sabbath, and they're livid because they've read this stuff. They come out with... Now, I think it's much bigger than that. I think the advantage now we have is that we get this story through the end of the story,
right,
through the person
right.
of Jesus and the revelation of himself. But without that, I think it does lead you to this, gosh, you got to cross every T, dot every I, get it exactly right, or God just smokes you.
If you're trying to be holy on your own.
Exactly.
See, I read that stuff, and maybe it's because I do get the privilege of understanding the full dynamic. And I read that stuff, and I go like, wow, that drives me to a place of utter dependence. I go like, without Jesus, you know, there's another favorite word for you, I'm screwed. Okay? Relax. There's some young people that listen to this, okay? They understand that.
Let's lower the cone of silence.
Okay. The dynamic is, I read that, and I go like, wow. God put that in there for a reason. I don't go like, okay, you know, some weird God snuck that into the Bible. It's kind of like, it's their own purpose. Do I fully understand it? No, I do not. The glimpse I get out of it, the heart tug that I feel like the Holy Spirit is, he drives me to a place where I go like, wow, I am so thankful that Jesus was provided because I can't measure up. And because I know I can't measure up, I'm not trying to measure up.
Right.
It drives me to an end of my performance.
Yeah,
so
great. Absolutely.
Now, I wasn't there for the first hearing. I wasn't there trudging through the little wilderness for the first time. But, I look in Corinthians where it says, this stuff was written for us.
And
upon
Israel,
whom the ends of the... And it's like, it's all meant to instruct us. There's a revelation of him right there.
Absolutely. I think that's true. And I love when Jesus is hanging out with the two boys on the road to Emmaus, and he says he took them through the whole of the Old Testament and showed himself in
every
place.
Yeah, I'd like to be on that walk.
Oh, that would be a sermon worth hearing. And I think you're right. I think we read these things, we have a sense that doing things God's way is the only place there's life. That's the only place there's life. And it's not necessarily doing all the little hocus-pocus sacrifices and getting all the every little thing just so. It's and even though these people didn't, and the whole history of the Old Testament is they never got it right. They never stayed faithful to this covenant very long at all, and God never stopped loving them. God never stopped inviting them to himself. And over again, God, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness, and inviting them back and using their tragedies to do it, using at times their abundance to do it, always inviting, always drawing. And the overwhelming thing I get is, man, I want to this day, this day I wake up, I don't feel the angst of I've got to perform for God today. Huh? But I do have this wonderful desire that says, Father, whatever it is that you're teaching me today, whatever it is that you're asking of me today, whatever it is that you're freeing me from today, I don't want to miss it. I want to hear it. I want to be involved in it. I want to watch it unfold. And it does lead to that hunger. There's no other way I want to live than in him. But I don't see the God of the Bible as the God that stones people for picking up sticks on the Sabbath. So I don't know how to answer that particular event.
Sure.
Jesus certainly didn't do it. So I don't know how that bears God's heart. I really don't know what that says about him, whether people misunderstood that, whether God really wanted that to be so. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. I just know that our God's not that kind of God because Jesus showed us otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, because I have it.
Now we're far afield from where we started, aren't we?
I don't know. The reality is I think when you approach stuff like that, you know, I can safely say most all of the human beings I know don't understand that. They don't really get the deal. And if you're a little kid that loves playing with sticks, you probably really don't understand that verse. If that's the only verse you were given, you're going to be like, okay, I don't get that. I think I usually approach all this stuff to realize, like, wait a minute, God wanted this recorded. It is written down for posterity's sake. It is there. There is life. There's spirit and understanding somewhere behind that. And I usually kind of go like, all right, God, help me understand who you are. Not in light of this one and only particular verse.
Right.
But in the full scope of what's going on, what does this reveal about you? I mean, the many facets of a diamond. There's something there that is life-giving, not just, you know, crushing and, you know, God disfiguring.
But the people who do understand this are the legalists who want to make other people follow those rules.
No, they do not understand this.
They think they do. I agree that they don't.
Yes.
But I mean, I heard from someone recently doing one of those things, and when they're saying about not fitting into the institution the way they're being told to fit into it, they hearken back to this old covenant. And God said, you know, Moses, build everything exactly to the pattern that I've told you. And they say, this structural system we have today is exactly the pattern that God gave us through the apostles. And if you don't know better, that sounds incredibly convincing. And
sure,
there are literally millions of people in captivity to that mindset today because people project that they do know this absolute pattern. We do have it. We have received it from the prophets and the apostles. And if you don't follow what I'm saying, then you're going to wither up and die in egregious error. But that's a bigger discussion.
That language alone does a horrible injustice to the many other revealed aspects of who God is in that same pages. He doesn't talk like that. He doesn't act like that.
Well, I grant you. But if you don't know that, people don't know it. If you just read the surface story, I know the wider story, and I'm reading Numbers and Leviticus going, ugh.
See, I think Numbers is rocking. Leviticus
Numbers
is a little sleepy for me.
Numbers got some great stories in it.
Numbers has some really cool stuff.
But you know, first part, a little boring, got to tell you. A lot of names, a lot of numbers. Not too exciting. Back part, you get into some wonderful stories of...
You study out some of those names and numbers, and I don't understand all of them, but some of them... No, stop it. You get into some of the meanings of them.
What do you mean, stop it?
You throw your hand at me. You're like, eh, whatever. if you only could see what Wayne is doing now.
We'll never go to a video podcast. We have the faces.
We will.
We have the faces for audio.
I'm wearing my construction clothes. I look glorious.
You look.
I still got stucco on me.
And you're a little ripe.
Thank you. Thank you.
I got to say.
Well, I do think that there is a revelation to be had behind all those little things in the Scripture, because I realize God did put them there for purpose, and I do believe they reveal something to him. And the fun thing about it is, even if I don't understand it, it sends me off in a little sort of journey of discovery of at least kind of saying, God, what is this about? I really don't get that one.
Yeah.
And so I think the Bible is meant to lead us into a discussion. It's meant to lead us into a conversation.
Absolutely. But I got to tell you, I'm going to finish Numbers tomorrow. And then I'm running.
Star on your chart, Wayne.
No, I'm running off to Ephesians for a little vacation afterwards. That's for sure.
There you go.
Well, what are you doing this weekend? Any exciting?
Oh, I got more soccer games than anyone in their right mind should ever go to.
I'm going to visit some folks in the Fresno area and up Sacramento to visit the family room media guys and some of their folks. And then back down through the valley and home, and they're getting ready to head out right after that to New York for upstate New York for a bit. So that'll be a lot of fun.
At some point, I hope I'm going to sleep in and really enjoy myself.
Me too.
Yeah.
You got to do it once in a while.
Yeah, it's spiritual napping.
I hear you.
Hey, bless you out there, folks.
And if you got, we're going to do our Q&A podcast next time around, next week. So if you've got some questions that you want to throw at Brad, as we've said before, send them to me.
And
Wayne. If you want some to say, I think he's got enough, though. He keeps gloating.
I'm not gloating, but I have a handful.
I've got 10 for Brad, and they're pretty interesting. We'll use them. But if you've got any other kind of, and we're looking for, you know, deep, struggly things as well, light, frivolous things like, you know, your first pet's name or some crazy thing.
I'll tell you next week.
Whatever you'd like to know, we'll get into it with you. So other than that,
celebrate the uniqueness of your journey.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,